Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are broadcasting live from the beautiful Dillon State Park here in East Central Ohio. And today we're having on Jay Widener, who is called by Wired Magazine as an authority on the Hermetic and alchemical traditions and an erudite conspiracy hunter. Jay Widener is a renowned author, filmmaker, and Hermetic scholar, considered to be a modern-day Indiana Jones for his ongoing worldwide quests to find clues to mankind's spiritual destiny via ancient societies and artifacts. His body of work offers great insight into the circumstances that have led to the current global crisis. He is the producer of documentary film 2012, The Odyssey, its sequel Timeway 2013, and the director of the forthcoming feature documentary, Infinity, the Ultimate Trip. And I believe we have Jay on the line. Jay, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing real good. What state are you in, Jay?
I'm in the state of Oregon.
I got to visit the Pacific Northwest this year. It's just tremendously beautiful out there.
It is. It's the best, in my point of view, of course, highly opinionated. I think it's the most beautiful area of the country, so I'm real happy to be here.
I would agree. I was up near Mount Adams.
Oh, yeah.
And that's so beautiful.
It is.
And I got to see the Columbia River Gorge.
Yeah.
All that
natural. It's a great place. It's got lots of ecosystems and interesting wildlife and deserts and mountains and glaciers and ocean and very few places in the world, actually, that have 14,000 foot mountains right next to roaring oceans. So it's really a great place, and I'm glad to be here, especially at this particular time in history.
Well, I went up to James Gilliland's ranch there near Mount Adams, and the sky there at night was so beautiful. It was just filled with stars and those tremendous pine forests. And I do. I think you're being perfectly honest when you say it's one of the most beautiful places in the country. It might be one of the most beautiful places in the world, actually.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think it's. We're very lucky in the United States to have the Pacific Northwest, which is actually is the first part of the United States that gets hit by the various storms that come through the country, and so we're always first, and we can kind of always tell what it's going to be like a few days from now or then in the winter in the rest of the country. So it's kind of interesting because we will get hit by a big blinding wind rainstorm, and we know there's going to be a lot of snow in the Rockies, heavy winds and icy conditions in the Midwest, and even the East Coast is going to get hit. So it's really kind of funny because you're kind of like the shaman sitting at the edge of the village, able to see what's happening before the rest of the village sees it, which is really the whole purpose of shamanism anyway. And so I think that there's a reason why so many, I don't want to call them weirdos. We'll call them woo-wooers, woo-woo people. How's that? Woo-woo people live in the Pacific Northwest, which has the highest degree of eccentrics and woo-wooers, I believe, than any other section of possibly the entire planet.
It's very spiritual up there. I can't explain it. You just have to kind of go there and be a part of it. It has a totally different.
It's the weather, actually. It's the incredible concurrence of the cold, very cold Pacific with the high mountains of the Cascades and the volcanic areas of the Cascades, and it creates various climates, many climates that defy the imagination in some respects. So, yeah, in one place it can be raining 300 inches a year, and in a place just 20 miles away it can only rain 11 inches. And it's very strange and odd and very close to the Earth, and I think that's what makes... We're actually the highest... we have the highest degree of non-religious attendance in the entire country. We have the highest amount of book sales in the entire country and the highest amount of magazine and periodical sales in the entire country. Now, that may be because it rains all the dang time, but... I don't know.
I live in the Dillon State Park here, basically right next to the park. You actually have to go into the park to get to my house. And one of the things I like to do is to take long walks in the woods. We have close to 10 miles of hiking trails here. And I always feel that the interaction with the plants kind of rejuvenates my whole system. And there's almost this energy exchange that goes on between my body and the plants, and I feel like it must be correcting my aura or something. Have you done any research in that area?
Oh, yeah. Everybody on Earth, all living things, possess an energy body or a luminous body or a light body. And when you're in nature, you're surrounded by the light bodies, which are really higher dimensional bodies which exist around anything that's alive, really. And when you're in the city, you're surrounded by concrete and steel, and these elements do not possess luminous or light energy bodies, and so you're surrounded by deadness, and this seems to have a horrific effect on the human luminous energy field that contracts in cities and in situations like elevators or even working in cubicles and things like that. Your light body tends to contract until it's really real close to the skin. But when you're in the country and you're surrounded by the light bodies of plants and especially flowing water and ice and things like that, your light body can expand out for, literally miles around your body if you're in a comfortable situation. And, of course, your health and everything is being governed by this light body, this luminous energy field, which is like a donut of light around your body with your spine as the central hole in the donut. And so your spine is a central magnet, so to speak. And the energy body is the magnetic flux which surrounds the physical magnet, which is invisible to the naked eye, unless you lay down a field of iron particles, then you can finally see the electromagnetic field, and the human body possesses a piezoelectric magnetic field, very low voltage, very sensitive to high voltage situations like, lights and luminous things like that. But the energy body exists, and your health and your consciousness and everything is based actually on the coherence of the energy flow within the light body. And when, you're in a samadhi state or you're trying to achieve certain kinds of spiritual states, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to reach a coherence within the flow of your energy light body, which passes down through the top of your head, goes all the way down through your spine, comes out through the bottom of your spine, goes up around your body like a big donut, sort of, and then comes back down around again, and it is infinite. It never dies, and it feeds you information from higher dimensional sources. But as we, as the world knocks us apart and as we face the insults of life, we begin to lose contact with the information coming from higher dimensional sources And that's a problem that the entire world is facing right now as we fall into the age of, you know, the final realms of this age of ignorance and despair. And hopefully we're coming out the other side here. And what that means is that we will rediscover the light body knowledge, the knowledge that we are higher dimensional beings resting our feet on a three-dimensional planet, and that we are interacting with the universe on a higher level than we could ever imagine, and everything is actually okay, and we don't have to worry. And the world is taking care of everything, and we are not as as individuals, we're not as important to the ultimate scheme as we think we are, but as a collective, we are actually almost absolutely 100% responsible for the cultural, spiritual narrative that's unfolding right now, and we better get a hold of that and start realizing what that means, because it's going to become a very serious situation soon, and we want to be all prepared as we can for everything that's about to happen.
When your interview with George Norrie came out on Coast to Coast several months ago, I was spellbound, and it had a tremendous impact on me, and I studied it over and over again. And I believe our society is living in what I would call, I guess, a false reality.
Yes.
And one area that we don't really have a clear picture of is our history. Tonight, hopefully, you'll help us reveal part of the true history of this planet. And can you tell us about the ancient writings called the Puranas?
Yeah, the Puranas are actually an oral tradition which existed far before written word, before the original Sanskrit and Hebrew and Egyptian and Sumerian were conceived. There was the oral tradition, and the oral tradition was passed down for possibly 30, 40,000, 50,000 years, if we're to believe the timelines described in these oral traditions. And the Puranas are one of these oral traditions from southern India, the Dravidian sect of people, which are the extremely dark-skinned southern Indians. And they tell an astonishing tale of ages and what did they call yugas, in which time is divided by these cycles, and you can't really do much about whatever time cycle you're living in. And sometimes the cycle is vibrant and alive, and sometimes the cycle is reaching the end and it is dead and useless. And about every 60,000 years or so, according to these texts, these cycles are interrupted by a gigantic flaring of the sun, which causes incredible death and havoc here on Earth. So there's a cleansing every 60,000, 62,000 years, depending on how you do the counts, and that this has happened at least four times in a row. And when I say 62,000, I mean 62,000 to move into the disaster, and then a 62,000-year period of healing. So about a 120,000-year cycle in between. And this is called a kalpa in Purana lore. And so every 120,000 years, the world is kind of remade. And this falls in line with what evolutionary biologists keep discovering, which is that there's no intermediate species and that nature just seems to, you know, just explode on its own suddenly and then disappear suddenly too and then explode again into higher forms. And what this is the Sophionic or the Earth intelligence remaking the species, all of the species, not just the human species, after what I believe is an electromagnetic reversal, which causes the solar flares and causes solar crustal movement, and a lot of other things. And I think there's a lot of evidence to support that, especially Robert Felix in his book, Electromagnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps. So basically, the Puranas say that you go through these ages, and doing the math, which I'm making a film right now about the math of the Puranas, we can see that we are now in the final ages of the Kali Yuga. And I think that this is spurring on a lot of curious development, research and development by the powers that be, and they're searching for ways to possibly avoid this coronal mass ejection solar flare kind of thing that's going to, they think, is going to happen. By the way, none of this has to be based in any kind of reality. It's just texts, and I'm just reporting these texts. So I'm not saying that there is going to be solar flares, or there isn't going to be solar flares, or there isn't any of this. I'm just reporting what I'm finding. And so I think we're now at the end of this, I think what they're saying is that we're now at the end of this cycle, and it could end now. It could end in 2442, which is the date that the Puranas give as the end of this cycle, or maybe 2012 as the beginning or precursor to the end. But I will have to say this. When this research first started years ago, I have to say that even then I knew that 2010 was going to be an important year if this cycle was proved to be correct. And I have to say that the events of this year have been confirming that this may very well be the beginning of a, 400-year-long cycle down into the end of another age and beginning of another age also. So, because I'm talking about mainly the events that have happened here on Earth, the Gulf oil thing and the weird earthquakes and that kind of thing. So, the Puranas say that this happens and this is part of life and this is how nature remakes itself. And I'm not trying to bum anybody out because I'm not actually saying that it is happening now. I'm just saying that that's what they say. And that some people in the powers that be section of this world believe that this is happening, and they are moving accordingly to make sure that they are not killed by any possible solar event.
Can you tell us how you were able to obtain these ancient writings? Did you go to a library, or did you find them on the internet, or what?
Well, they're on Amazon. You can buy the whole volume. Forgotten Books, I think it's called.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's about eight or nine volumes. It's called the Puranas, P-U-R-A-N-A-S. Yep. They're a tough read. Don't blame me if you get lost in it. Well, yeah, I mean, they're an oral tradition. They were written down. And so I have to read them out loud. I can't, I'm a fast reader. I read about 3 or 4 books a week. But when I get to the Puranas, I have to read them out loud. It'll take me sometimes a half hour to read one page. Because it's really dense, and you have to really understand the symbology of what it's saying, and when it says Vishnu, what does it mean when it says Vishnu? And when you start understanding it, you begin to see that we have a real problem in our culture today is that the merchant class has so taken over our culture that we've ruined our language, and we've nouned, we've created nouns for everything, and we speak in nouns because we're a merchant culture and we have to sell things. And so if you're going to sell things, you have to be able to identify them as person, place, or thing. But the Puranas, and actually ancient English and Chinese and all the ancient languages, were actually verb languages. And that means that instead of naming a thing, a person, or a place, you named a process. And so, a cat wasn't a cat, it was catting. A dog wasn't a dog, it was dogging. A tree wasn't a tree, it was treeing. A person wasn't a person, it was humaning. And when we changed our language to a noun language, because we changed into a merchant society and not into a I would guess, a more spiritually oriented society. We nouned our language, and now we've lost track of how to even conceive of a unity existence. Whereas when you're in the verb world, you're saying there's a unity, and sometimes the unity is catting, and sometimes it's dogging, and sometimes it's treeing and fishing, and when you noun it, you separate it. You create this wall of separation, which is necessary to define an object in order to sell it in the marketplace, but wreaks havoc on us spiritually. And that's where the dilemma is right now, and this is why I have so much trouble reading the Purana text, as you will, as anyone would, because we're nouned out and we're not verbed out. But once you verbalize your language and your culture, it becomes easier to understand. And so, you have to, in some ways, be spiritually transmuted before you read them, and then they will help you. But if you really pursue them, you will be spiritually transmuted anyway. So language is the barrier that has been created, which divides us from our true nature, from our authentic humanness. And I think that it is the cause of nearly all the problems that we face today. Imagine if you had a politics that said there wasn't Iranians, there was people that were Iranian. You know, there weren't Israelis, there were people who were Israelying. There weren't Americans, there were people who were Americaning. Then you take, it gives you a different take on what you're defining with the words. And I think that this is the dilemma that we face. And when I increasingly try to explain deep and complex spiritual concepts on radio shows or in lectures, I am beginning to realize that I am coming up against this noun problem, and that until I can find some way to explain around the noun problem and get it into a process problem, I can't really help anyone solve any of the problems, spiritual, physical, or psychological.
Well, when you were describing that, my thoughts went to the Tower of Babel.
Yes.
When you said language is a barrier. And at the Tower of Babel, our languages were separated on purpose. And I don't know if we want to dive into that sort of thing already, but I thought I would throw that out there.
Well, I mean, it's true, and I think, you know, we can't underestimate language. It is really the underlying code of the human race. And we're incredibly fortunate to be able to, you know, utter all these grunts and groans and have them be understood by other beings of like nature. It is a form of telepathy, and I think it's a time to talk straight. And I think language is the single most important thing that we have on our side for those of us trying to foster conscious change at this point. So I'm a big fan of language. I'm a fan of Noam Chomsky. I'm a fan of this idea that human beings are intrinsically smart. And if you state your sentence, this is not my concept, this is a concept I got from Noam Chomsky, that if you state your sentence in the right way with the right vernacular and syntax, and even if you use words that the listener does not understand, because you put it in the right vernacular and syntax, the listener will understand it. And that's a form of magic, and I believe it's true because I've tried it. And so I'm a huge believer in that we can solve our problems by articulating the situation properly.
That's very interesting. According to your research, Jay, human civilization on Earth goes back possibly a million years, and that we had very high technology in the past. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, if you look at the work of Richard Hoagland, especially it's not really his work. It's the European Space Agency took a photograph of Phobos, which is a moon of Mars. And you should type it in on Google, and everyone should check it out, because, I mean, you're looking at a moon that has a substructure, a kind of a ribbed infrastructure. And it's just painfully obvious from looking at it that this is not an artificial object. Not a natural object. Natural objects do not have rib substructures, yet it has it. And also, if you look at the Iapetus, the moon of Saturn, you can see that, again, there's evidence of some kind of intelligence work there. Also, the work of Joseph Skipper on Mars. Google in Hale, it's H-A-L-E, Hale Crater Civilization, and check out what he's found up there on Mars. And when you look, you can see that there's evidence everywhere of a past civilization, including here on Earth. And I think that we have to come to grips with this idea that not only were there past civilizations, but they were more advanced than us, even if they didn't have the technology that we have. In other words, there could be a civilization that had animal skins and lived in caves, that they were more advanced than we are in many ways. And the Egyptians were very advanced. So I think we have to come to grips with the fact that we didn't rise out of the muck, 25,000 years ago. We're far greater, we're bigger, we're longer, things are more strange than we can ever imagine. And when we realize that, then we can go back and read texts like the Puranas, or the old Egyptian hieroglyph texts, or the Sumerian cuneiform tablets, and we can understand that we're dealing with the people who may actually even be smarter than we are. And when we do that and we face these historical facts with the respect that they deserve, then we can understand that, in fact, we are being told that we're just one in a long line of civilizations. And this civilization is actually coming to a halt here right now. I'm not saying the world is coming to a halt. I'm just saying the civilization is coming to a halt. We can all feel it. We can all see it. And it will be here soon.
Jay, the chat room is filled up pretty quick here, and I got a few little quick questions from the chat room. Sasquatch Spirit is asking if you can spell piranhas for us, and
sure.
I tried. I'm not sure I got it correct.
I'll try. I hope I get it right here. It's a P-U-R, A, N as in Nancy, A, and then you can add an S if you want to make it plural. So it's piranha or piranhas.
Okay, and Dominica Moore made the comment that she thought that maybe we lost our telepathic abilities at the Tower of Babel. Could you comment?
Well, we did, and that's again the problem with this nounification of language. When we begin identifying people as person, places, or things instead of aspects of a process, then we also lose our empathy for those other creatures. See, that's when the wall of separation begins. And once you lose your empathy for them, then you're no longer in telepathic communication, because it's all based on empathy. And so you can see that it's kind of the precursor to all the problems. And it's one of the reasons why people have so much trouble reading alchemical texts, the Puranas, or anything that was written before the nounification of all the languages occurred.
Monarcha states beliefs are what separate us, and I imagine you could comment on that too.
Well, they are. I mean, there's only a few beliefs that don't separate us. One is a belief that we should be breathing fresh air. Another is a belief that we should be drinking fresh water. Another is that we should have good food. Another is that we should be in communities where we can have love and care for each other, for the old and for the poor and for the children. And maybe music, is that another one I think we can all agree on? So there are things we can agree on. They're not beliefs, they're needs. And so we should shed beliefs and concentrate on needs. And to me, there's actually some other needs that, most people don't include in their bag of needs. And that is, I think you need to meditate, and I think you need to do a yoga or a Tai Chi. I think you need to walk in the woods. I think you need to, help people out, and I think you need to smile at a person who's not looking like they're having a very good day. So, you know, there's a few other things that you can add in, but outside of that, no, I don't believe in beliefs. I don't have much faith in any of them anymore. I think the whole world has become kind of a phantasm, and we're in a world of conflicting phantasms. And every phantasm, once it undergoes a scrutiny of investigation, you find that there's nothing there. There's nothing. Nothing. You know, there's no real Catholic Church. There's no real Israeli people. There's no real Iranian people. Not really. Just migrants moving here and there. And when you start looking at all that, you realize that the whole thing, all the reasons for war and killing and everything, are just based on phantasms that we've concocted in our mind. And it's kind of at the point of history now that we need to just shed the phantasms and just face reality and face things that really do mean something to us, like, you know, decent food, no wars, you know, good water supply, fresh air. It's not that hard.
The Puranas tell us that perhaps 120,000 years ago, one of these civilizations on Earth escaped the coronal mass ejections, and they left in these large spaceships, and they went to Mars, stayed underground for quite a while. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that's a good description of exactly what it says. And I believe that this was the serious break or the mistake that was made, because one of the things is that Sophia, or the Earth, or this intelligence of the Earth, what it does when it has one of these disasters is it consciously remakes beings, and that's what baffles evolutionary biologists. And what this group did was they escaped the cleansing of the Earth, so to speak. And they came back. When they came back, they brought back all the old genetic strains. They brought back all the old animal strains. And these strains were helped by this group of people who had left and came back. And they came to dominate the Sophia Earth that was here. And so they've kind of just kept the same thing going, and we're not really advancing anymore. And so they kind of broke the rules. And they've been living here for a long time, for probably about 60,000 years, and they're living with us. And we have legends about them. You can read the Book of Enoch. They're the Anunnaki. They're the Aryans. And they've been living here. And they've been having, sometimes they break their vow and they have sex with earth women and create hybrids. But they're not really hybrids because they were human anyway. But they did get slightly changed in the 120,000 intervening years that occurred. And when they came back, they were different. They were taller. They had pale white skin. They had whitish and red hair. And they were very advanced. And they came here, and they left us alone for the most part, but 6,000 years ago, they reared their heads again because alarm bells went off, which told them that it was time to start moving and get out of Dodge before the next round of coronal mass ejections occurs. And this will all come out here in the next year or so in our new film, Sacred Geometry of Time, but that'll have to wait till then. So so that's what happened, and that's who's been pretty much ruling the earth, is this group of people that, you know, the Gnostics used to call the Archons. Today they're called the Anunnaki, or the aliens, or the Nordics, and they have different names for them. And they're reported all around the world. They're where you get the name fairies, because fair means white, you know, blue eyes or green eyes and light skin. And you start going around the world and you find that there's these myths everywhere of these beings. And And they still are here for some part, but most of them have escaped to begin again another day. You need to go to Joseph Skipper, type in Hail Crater Civilization, and start looking at some of the stuff that Hoagland and others have found on Mars, and you'll start wondering what's really going on.
So the structures in the Cydonia region on Mars were built by these Aryans, or the Vril, from Europe.
That's right. That's right. They built them, and then, you know, they came back, and they renamed all the areas that they came back and occupied. So Sidon, or Cydonia, was also Lebanon, Syria, Iraq. All right, and David Flynn has done incredible work with the Martian Chronicles, where he goes through the history and shows you that the etymology of all the places in the Middle East is all derived from names that are on Mars, and it's this group. They're here. They've been here. They're the ones that are behind the scenes, ones that we think are conspirators. And most of the rest of everyone is just a useful idiot who doesn't really understand what's going on. And this is why I'm going to come. Go
ahead. Yeah, I've heard you say that the United States was actually created by the Aryans or the Vril.
It was. In fact, the end date for the Piranhas is 2442, and the United States was created 666 years before, in 1776, as was the Illuminati in Europe, and these were that in itself may not mean much to most people, but when you understand the higher dimensional mathematics behind the space-time ideas of the Piranhas and the Vril, you begin to realize that 666 actually is a very important number, and you can see that that there's evidence also within the architecture of Washington, D.C., which was built right after 1776, which also has this higher dimensional time-space matrix number system built into it. And all this is coming out in a book by Robert Lawler, coming out next year, and our film also with Robert Lawler, Sacred Geometry of Time. So if you guys give me, you know, another 9 months or so, I will have this out in a possibly a six-hour epic in which we are going. Robert Lawler is the smartest guy on Earth right now, and he has cracked the code, and we're going to get it out in a way that is going to be understandable to people, and that's our goal.
Sacred Geometry of Time. I'll have to make sure I get that. That sounds very interesting.
Well, I'll send you a copy when it comes out.
Oh, thank you. You had contact with a NASA insider that confirmed your knowledge of the Aryans or the Vril. Can you tell us about that?
Well, people in NASA were talking to me in the early 90s. I was writing a book about the moon and the strange things that are on the moon, and they were... Well, they came forth to me, you know, pretty honestly. They were old. I don't want to name their names or anything. But they told me that, you know, they had higher, much more advanced technology than they'd let us on to believe. And that the rocketry was just a cover for this super advanced technology that had been developed in Germany during World War II. In fact, I've now come to believe that World War II is nothing more than a cover story for a reason to fund this technology, you know, in the Penanumbra camps in Germany and Poland, where they developed this stuff. So I'm a big fan of Joseph Farrell's work, and he's done top-notch research into this and proven it beyond any shadow of a doubt, as far as I'm concerned, that this flying saucer technology, while there may have been, you know, people who were using it or beings or aliens, the stuff that we've been seeing since World War II, the proliferation of UFO sightings, etc., is due mainly to the creation of these craft by the Nazis, who were doing it for the Vril. And the United States has it, and Russia had it. I'm not even sure there was a Cold War anymore. I'm wondering if they were, if that even was a mask to cover up the fact that they were working on a binary research project to create some seriously advanced technology. And these people told me that, you know, we had these craft and that we could get pretty far away from the Earth really fast. And, I leave it at that. You can use your imagination. But I would point out that British hacker Gary McKinnon, who is the United States, is now seeking extradition to bring him from England to the United States, told a British newspaper he had hacked into the Pentagon computers, and he said there was a secret space program and that there were 100,000 personnel in it and that they had ships that were going all over the place. Now, that on its own sounds like a kook job, except for the fact that the United States is spending an inordinate amount of money and time trying to extradite this guy. Why? There's only one reason: to get him here, to shut him up. That can be the only reason, because he saw things he shouldn't see. So, and that's what I've heard. So, you know, I think there is a secret space program. I think it's huge. I think that that's one of the reasons why they hired Stanley Kubrick to fake the Apollo moon landings, was to hide it. I think the whole thing can be actually fairly easily understood once you understand that this thing is so big and so huge, and what they're finding out there is so astonishing that they themselves are now so far advanced beyond us that they don't even feel like they need to tell us what's going on anymore. And, so, I mean, look at it this way. If you wanted to travel in time, if you wanted to travel forward in time, you wouldn't really need to have to travel forward in time. All you really need to do is receive information from the future. Okay? So you could theoretically receive information from the future, which actually downloads everything that happened between now and, say, 1,000 years from now. And that future would be instantly created once you had that information, because you would now know how to make the machines or whatever happened at that point. And I think that's kind of what's going on here. I think that they didn't really contact something in the future. They contacted artifacts that were so advanced that they instantaneously passed through a gulf of could be 10,000 or 100,000 years of technological advance, and that's where they are right now. And they don't know how to tell us, nor do they care to tell us.
So these Aryans, or these Vril, are in control of what would some would call the New World Order. Is that correct?
They tell the managers of the New World Order what to do. They never show their face. But they have people that they let see, that we can see, that we think are the ones who are running the show, so that we never see the ones that are really running the show.
So you called our politicians then useful idiots in that sense.
Well, they are, and we should completely... At this point, I think that every time a politician speaks, we should just all roll on the floor and start laughing and pointing at him. Because at this point, it's kind of, the joke is in, we all know about the joke, and and we know they're not representing us, nor are they doing anything useful outside of representing the managers and what the managers want. And so, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me. It doesn't matter who it is, Obama or Bush or anyone. There, it's obvious at this point, I think, to anyone who's a thinking person that nothing is going to change. And that, in some ways, the lies are getting even worse, because now the Gulf oil spill is not solved. It hasn't gone away, but they told us that it's over. And the Iraq war hasn't gone away. It isn't solved, and it's still going on. But they told us that we're out of there. So now they've kind of reached this place where they're just telling us because we're so hyper aware of everything that's going on now because of the internet and a kind of a growing consciousness, they cannot actually lie like they used to. So now they're just creating gigantic phantasms and telling us that this is the truth. And unfortunately, a lot of us are buying them, and we think that the Gulf oil spill has gone away, and we think we're really getting out of Iraq, or we got out of Iraq. Actually, I guess we're out, even though Americans are still dying. And so it's like the lie is just, they just cranked the lie up now again because we're waking up to what is going on. And it isn't a lot of us. It's only a small percentage. But that small percentage is the only percentage that matters. In other words, if there's only 1% of the people that want to play in a football game or a soccer game, then the only people that matter in the game are those people. So if there's only 1% of the people who are awake and want to change what they see, the corruption and the violence and everything, we're the only ones that matter. So if we want to change the game, we can do it. And it's kind of self-evident to me. So the managers are only managing successfully as long as they keep us completely stymied in fear and believing their propaganda. And it's time for that to all end, I think. I think it's time for us to take back. I don't think we should care whether there's coronal mass ejections or not. I hope that those guys are all terrified and scared so that we can take back power while they're terrified. So I think we just have to do it. I think we just have to rise up as a people and say, you know, we're done. We're done with your whole thing. And mostly we're done with your phantasms. We're done with your weaving of phantasms in our heads, trying to get us to think that something's going on when it ain't. And free ourselves. And that's really my goal. I want to see the human race get free of these guys. And if they're leaving, and I think they are, I think they've left, good riddance. Go away. Don't come back. You know? And
where do these Vril or Aryans typically geographically locate themselves on Earth when they're here?
They don't like the sunlight. Their 120,000 years on Mars kind of depleted their melanin in their skin, and they can't get, and also their alchemical experiments cause it, but they can't get melanin, which is what causes your skin to go dark when you're in the sunlight. They can't get it into their skin. It's an artifact of living on Mars. And so you got to go to really the northern regions of Earth, which is really where you find the legends of these people, Finland and Norway and Sweden. And this is, of course, where Tolkien gets his mythology from, the Finnish mythologies. And the elves would be the Aryans. In other words, they were tall and blonde and basically they stayed away from the rest of the races. But until history came, and then history, of course, started 6,000 years ago or so, and that's when the Aryans went into effect, went into work, started the action, started civilization, began creating the edifice that would allow them to rebuild their technologies to get out of here. And that's what the elves are doing in Lord of the Rings. They're leaving and going to the west. Well, in Norse mythology, going to the west was a euphemism for going to Mars. And the Norse and the German people all believe that they were from Mars. That's their central intrinsic myth. And if you read the Norse myths, you can see that there's these incredible connections to these Aryan gods and these powerful beings who came here on burning ships to escape Ragnarok, which is an Armageddon type of thing. And it's very fascinating.
Do you believe the Vril or the Aryans had anything to do with the Gulf oil spill, or was it an accident? How do you perceive that?
Well, I mean, you know, I think that there's many ways to look at it. There's a lot of, to be honest with you, that Gulf oil spill is one of the most disturbing stories that I followed, and I only pick one or two stories out at a time to really concentrate on because I'm so busy. But at heart, I'm a lover of the earth, so that one hit me hard, and I started following it. And I tell you, that story is absolutely just gives me the creeps. Everything from the fact that it blew up on Hitler's birthday to Matt Simmons, the biggest critic of BP, dying in his hot tub. And right before he died, did an interview where he said that the relief wells would never work. We heard 2 or 3 months ago that the relief wells were going to be early and that they would be in place by early August. Here we are in almost mid-September, and the relief wells aren't in yet. And they should have been drilled like 30, 40 days ago. They're not being put in. The reason they're not being put in is because there is no bore on the well. It is blown out. The reason it's blown out is because the Earth's fundamental dynamics are undergoing a shift, and this is why you're seeing sinkholes and why you're seeing these weird volcanoes and strange earthquakes all over the place, because the central electromagnetic core of the Earth is undergoing a dynamic shift right now. And this is all prophesized to happen and start in 2010, and it is. And so it's a great cause for concern. So I don't think it was actually caused by anybody. I think that they just foolishly dug the well. But when it did break, and it broke because of increased pressure underneath the earth, and now we have several, maybe even 10, 15 holes of oil pouring out all over the Gulf, and they can't stop it because they broke into an oil volcano. And that's why they're not even bothering with the relief wells, and they're acting like it's all capped, and it's just all one big, huge ocean of you-know-what. I think that what you're seeing is that they're letting it happen now because it's going to depopulate the Gulf region and probably a lot of the world, because the United States relies on the Gulf for seafood so much. So I think what the managers have decided is that we're getting too smart too fast, and we're beginning to wake up, and it's time to put us asleep, only this time not figuratively, if you know what I mean. And so, sure. It's a very dangerous time we're in, and it's a race between, history is a race, H.G. Wells said history is a race between education and disaster, and we're in that race, and we're in the final aspects of that race, and those of us who are trying to educate are trying to do it as fast as we can, but, events are overtaking the situation, so now I think we just have to worry about the people who are awake and aware and hope that they can take care of themselves so that we can get through this nasty little period of time we're going through, come out the other side, and maybe create a little bit better world than the one we had.
So that whole thing about them having this capped or partially capped is just propaganda?
Total propaganda. Total and complete propaganda. The well had broke through the top. In other words, they poked a hole, like poking a hole in a shook up can of soda, okay? And it's just pouring out. And what happened is that the borehole, the pressure from underneath tore through the borehole and ripped various holes all through the floor of the Gulf. And now we've got 6 or 7, 8 or 9, who knows? You have to have a submarine to find out. Holes in the Gulf, and so that caused the pressure to suddenly drop on the initial hole. So now it wasn't up at 75,000 PSI. It was suddenly went down to 30,000 PSI. That didn't tell us that it had lost its pressure because it finally released enough gas and oil. That told us that the other holes had finally worked their way up to the top. This is exactly what Matt Simmons was saying was going on. As soon as Matt Simmons came on TV and said that everything I just told you, and that the relief wells wouldn't work, he drowned in his hot tub, and now there's no one with any credibility to criticize any of this. And none of it has stopped. It's just spread. And they're all congratulating themselves and giving themselves bonuses, and Obama's feeling really good about everything, but none of it's real. In fact, they just could have possibly, eventually destroyed, a huge part of the oceans of the world, and they can't stop it, and they know they can't. And they created a BS story quickly, and I knew that the relief wells would never get there. I told my wife, I told my friends, and in late July, early August, I said they're supposed to be there by the 7th of August. They will never get there. And here we are a month later, and they're still not there. Why not?
Well, I got to thank you, Jay, because I didn't really realize this at all. I thought they had it under somewhat control. I had heard about some of the other holes appearing in the ocean floor, but
no.
I didn't realize it was still this bad, and I thank you
for
bringing that.
Actually, we're in the scariest situation I've ever seen where it just increased, they escalated their lies. Instead of solving problems, they're now escalating their lies to points where it's so flabbergasting you can't believe it.
Well, Jay, we're down to 3 minutes, and I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I hope someday you'll come back when your schedule allows. And go ahead and tell us about your website and everything, and we'll go from there.
You can go get my films. I have a film and video company, Sacred Mysteries, and you can go to sacredmysteries.com, and you can check out all, including my new film, with the award-winning Infinity, The Ultimate Trip, Journey Beyond Death, which is designed to help loved ones who are passing make their passage easier, and also give people courage to fight the good fight. And go to my website, Jay Widener, Jaywiedner, jaywiedner.com, and read all my high weirdness articles, all for free. And also, if you go to YouTube and you type in one word, Sacred Mysteries TV, you will see almost 300 brand new videos that are out with Hoagland and all of Greg Braden and Robert Thurman and Stanislav Grof and all the cutting edge of consciousness. So I encourage you all to go there, get your families to watch it. It's all G-rated, and smarten up.
Thanks so much, Jay. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope we talk to you again.
Okay, man.
Have a good evening.